Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Lindsay et al. Titled Statistical Considerations in Reporting Cardiovascular Research. This article was published August 8, 2018. Joining me today are Editor-in-Chief Irv Zucker and authors Mary Lindsay, Jillian Gray, Susan Wood, and Douglas Curran Everett. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. And I want to thank all of you participating in this important guidelines podcast. Reality, of course, is often not as clear as numbers lead us to believe. Winston Churchill once reportedly said that the only statistics you can trust are the ones you have falsified yourself. Of course, that was tongue-in-cheek. His predecessor as British Prime Minister in the 19th century, Benjamin Disraeli, allegedly said that there were three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. Now, as biomedical scientists, we have an obligation to get the numbers right. This is very important for both clinical and basic science studies. This may be easier said than done, however. The latest guideline article in our AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology series deals with how to report statistics in cardiovascular research. Mary, would you tell me what the motivation was for this article?
Sure, Irv. With increasing discussion on rigor and reproducibility, consideration for how statistics are reported in journal articles is a logical extension. In order to reproduce a study, we need to know how that study was analyzed.
I like that these guidelines are focused on reporting recommendations and does not get overly caught up in the details of how to do the statistics. As a physiologist, I find a lot of statistical reviews overly didactic in tone. Susan, you want to comment on this?
Well, Irv, I'm glad to hear you say that, because it was important to us that we provide guidance to authors without an underlying judgmental tone. All of the authors of this guidelines are physiologists first, and I think that comes across in the article. We specifically aim to make these statistics understandable and easily digestible for physiologists.
Thanks. Mary, the team took a unique approach and evaluated all AJP Heart articles published in the nine-month window from January to October 6, 2017, to determine the type and frequency of statistical tests and procedures currently used by our authors. Why did you take this approach?
Well, Irv, this is actually Doug's idea. During our first teleconference, he asked if we knew what the most common types of tests used that were being reported by AJP Heart authors, and we decided then that we needed to do the analysis in order to answer that question.
Jillian, what tests do AJP Heart authors indeed use?
Irv, we found that, not surprisingly, I suppose, that most authors were using t-tests and analysis of variance. So 70% of the all tests were those two tests. And for analysis of variance, people were using Bonferroni and Tookie's most often as their post-tests.
Right. Susan, were there any surprises from this analysis?
Yes, there were surprises, like how often there was a lack of enough detail. For example, only about 66% of the articles stated what statistical software was even used to conduct the analysis. And even more surprising was that sample sizes were only defined for each individual group 79% of the time. This is a critical piece of information to include in a study because adequate sample size is required for appropriate analysis of statistical tests. And reporting the ends in each group could make the difference in the ability of one lab being able to reproduce the findings of another lab.
Right. Mary, the article mentions that statistics should be considered at the experimental design phase. Can you elaborate on this?
Yes, I can. Right when the hypothesis is being developed is the right time to start thinking about how you're going to test that hypothesis. What variables will be measured, what and how many groups there are, what sample sizes are needed, and how individuals will be randomized. All of these are statistical considerations that should be given early in the game. Being proactive rather than reactive will make the study stronger. In fact, there are attempts in the field now to register preclinical studies before experiments even begin, and a complete experimental design, including statistical evaluation, will be needed for this reporting structure.
Right, that's great. Susan, what details are needed in the methods?
In the manuscript, we report the minimum statistical details needed. It can be found in Table 4 in this guidelines for easy reference. It includes the software that was used, how raw data was modified, what tests were used for each comparison, as well as whether ancillary tests were performed, and where the data can be accessed for reproducibility studies.
That's a very detailed list. AJP now requires, as everyone knows, that details be provided in each figure legend to provide information on the tests and the sample size for each group. Susan?
Well, I'm glad to hear this new AJP HEART requirement. I think that'll be very helpful to the readers.
Doug, tell us about the recommendations for the results section.
Irv, one of our recommendations is that authors report precise p-values rather than simply less than 0.05 or greater than 0.05. A precise p-value is important for three reasons. First, it communicates more information with the same amount of ink. Second, it allows each reader to assess a statistical result. And third, a precise p-value provides information about the likelihood that some result will be reproducible.
Are you saying that some p-values can be more significant than others?
No, I'm not. A p-value, any p-value, answers just one question. Is there anything other than random variation going on? The answer to this question is a simple yes or no. The problem is science is less yes or no and more how much. So although p-values are helpful, their value is limited.
Okay, what else?
Irv, there are four other things. First, in general, authors want to report variability using a standard deviation. Second, they want to report uncertainty about some population characteristic like a mean using a confidence interval. Third, authors want to report data using the number of digits that is meaningful for scientific relevance. For example, if your pressure transducer can measure blood pressure to the nearest 1/100th of a millimeter of mercury, will anyone really care? Instead, rounding to the nearest millimeter is appropriate. And last, we encourage authors to upload source data into a public repository such as Figshare.
Thanks, Jillian. One of the first changes most journals are making is to content in figures and table legends. What do you recommend?
As mentioned earlier, we recommend that legends should always contain as much information on the study as possible, and specifically there should be information on the tests used and on the sample sizes used for each group. We also feel it's important that sex is mentioned, unless only one sex is used in the study, where that should be clear in the methods. And for visualising data, it's important that we're able to look at individual responses, not just mean responses. So we recommend using box and whisker style graphs or something similar to that. Of course, that might not always be possible for results from complex experimental designs. But being clear in how data is presented is more important than being tied down to one template.
What's the take-home message for these guidelines? Doug?
Irv, one take-home is that when you have defined the experimental question you want to address, you want to next identify the experimental design to answer that question. Why? Because design drives analysis and communication.
Jillian?
It's important to provide the details and the methods and results for readers to know exactly what you did in your experiment.
Susan, what do you think?
So as a physiologist, it can sometimes be unclear when it is or is not appropriate to remove a major outlying value from a data set. It's all right to process your data and remove statistically significant outliers. You just need to have a plan in place before you start, as well as being very transparent in describing exactly what you did and why.
Right. Mary, any last words?
Sure. There are really more tests available than just the t-test and the ANOVA. We encourage you to explore options that are shown in Table 5 and not to hesitate to try new visualization tools and statistical tests, especially if you're using a big data set or omics approaches where you end up with large amounts of data. So using these new visualization tools will provide you with a way to fully digest your results and understand your data. And that, of course, will make for a much better manuscript.
Thanks. So I have one other question. This guidelines paper is chock full of references for investigators, and the tables will prove to be very useful, I think. But Doug, you've taken this approach and you've written articles in the past that have been published in many other journals, including AJP journals. And it's taken a very long time for investigators to come around to implementing many of the guidelines that we are now ultimately going to make required. Why do you think it's been so difficult?
Irv, you got to love a question that's easy to answer. The real answer is I have no idea. I've been talking about statistics within the physiology community for about 20 years. And Dale Benos and I wrote guidelines for reporting statistics back in 2004. And the guidelines have had virtually no impact on the reporting of statistics. I equate trying to change behavior to that of trying to change the direction of an ocean liner with a kayak. And what Tom Lang, who has written about statistics in general, has said in response to that, what we need are more kayaks, a lot more kayaks. I think change is very slow. I think that's a big part of it. People are used to doing what they've done in the past. People are used to doing what their mentors do. And it just takes a very long time to change behavior.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let me bring up one other issue, and anybody can chime in here, is whether or not we're doing the right thing in training students on the appropriate use of statistics. Many graduate programs require statistical courses. Some students have statistical courses as an undergraduate, but are they the right kind of courses for doing biomedical science? Many are offered by psychology departments, many are offered by colleges of public health. What do you think about how our statistical courses are designed for biomedical science?
That issue has been discussed within the statistical community for quite some time. And I think from my perspective, part of the difficulty in terms of helping students in the basic sciences understand statistics is that the statistics courses are taught by people who are not fully aware of what they're trying to teach. And education research has shown that once a misconception becomes embedded, it is very difficult to correct that misconception.
This has been a great discussion and one that our authors, I think, will find extremely helpful as they also look at this guidelines paper. I think it'll be very useful, at least for the readers of our journals and of people doing cardiovascular research in general. So we urge all the authors to cite these guidelines when they write their papers, if they use any of the tables or any of the ideas contained in this. So I want to thank you all for your participation, and I think now we'll turn it back to Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.